Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of Sorta Sophisticated, a podcast where we do our best to set judgment aside, I guess explore new ideas, and try not to offend too many cultures along the way, and hopefully laugh a little while we're doing it, right?
Right, because let's be real people, we're just here to make ourselves sound smarter on topics that might help us fake our way through a fancy dinner party, though no guarantees. But hey, it's worth a shot, and hopefully we get a little more sophisticated while doing it, sort of.
And I'm your host, Pete, sitting here getting drunk with my co-host, Amanda. And today, we're diving into the life and legacy of the centenarian, Jimmy Cotta, the peanut farmer who went from wrestling farm equipment in Plains, Georgia, to wrangling world peace as our 39th president of the United States of America. We'll explore how this man, who probably knows more about peanuts than most of us know about anything, managed to turn his small-town roots into global goodwill. From his famous toothy grin to his knack for building houses faster than you could say Habitat for Humanity. Get ready for a charmingly folksy ride. Yeah, I said that. Charmingly folksy ride through the life of America's most surprising and enduring ex-president. Okay, so Amanda, it's almost October 1st.
Okay, so what?
Do you know what happens on October 1st this year?
Yeah, totally. PSL Day.
What?
Yeah, National what? Pumpkin Spice Day.
Oh my God. Oh my God. I hate
yeah, you.
You
better be going to Starbucks and getting your PSL.
You are such a millennial. What?
I mean, duh.
Oh my God.
But why? Is that not right?
No, I mean, I don't know. I guess it's right. That's not what I'm talking about.
Oh, well, then what are you talking about? Could it possibly be better than Pumpkin Spice Day? Because.
This is way better
I
than
Pumpkin Spice
Day. This is way better than Pumpkin Spice
Day. Are you
Day.
Sure?
Yes.
Okay.
Shit. Okay. I think it is.
Okay, just tell me.
But now I feel like I might let you down. Okay. It's Jimmy Carter's birthday. Our 39th president.
Is he still alive?
He is. And he will officially be a centenarian.
Is that like the man with the horse body?
Oh my God, that's a that's a centaur?
Oh.
That's hilarious.
Just kidding.
No, it's someone who's 100 years old. What a total badass.
That's awesome. Though also, I don't know if I want to live to 100.
No, I have no interest in living to 100.
Okay.
Yeah, that's crazy.
But I also have another question.
What?
Don't presidents like die in order?
No way.
Like, wouldn't you think?
Like Jimmy Carter was supposed to die before Obama? I know. You would think that. But he's got good genes. He ate a lot of peanuts. Right?
Well, I mean, maybe not Obama, but like.
Right. But like, how old is like Biden or Trump? Like, they're like 80.
That's
they're
true.
More than 80.
That's
they're
true.
Over
so
80.
So like, if like a 30-year-old became president
well,
like the next
just
4 years.
Just think of Obama.
Years,
right? Yeah. Think of Obama. There's no way. Well, I mean, unless he gets in a car accident. But like, sorry. God, just don't make Obama die. But my point is like.
That's true. That's
Trump,
true, that's true.
Trump and or Biden are dying before Obama.
Yes.
Cut the crap.
Okay.
That's absolutely true, right?
Fair.
Where's Clinton in all this? How old's Clinton? He's getting
I don't
old.
Know, old.
Yeah, he's getting into his 80s. Whatever. So I don't think they die. I think they generally might die in order. Well, unless they're assassinated or something. But no, I don't think they have to die in order.
Okay.
No.
Fair.
Yeah, yeah.
But also,
he's 100.
But also?
What?
What does Jimmy Carter have to do with being cultured and curious besides being the 39th president?
A lot of stuff. Okay. Other than the fact that old people rule... we can learn a bunch of shit from them, right?
Well, I'm not arguing that we can.
No, that you've learned, like...
I'm just wondering what Jimmy Carter specifically...
Okay, he was compassionate. He was humble. He was a public servant. His work in diplomacy, his efforts in promoting human rights, his post-presidency initiatives offer millennials, yeah, you, Gen Zers, my kids, an excellent example of leadership that prioritizes ethical responsibility and community building. Understanding his legacy... teaches us about American history and how the individual actions of one person, literally one person, can influence the world. So if you can't tell already, I am freaking fired up about this episode. This is going to be good. And to make this really hard, our word of the day today is spatchcock.
Spatch a what?
Spatchcock. I love that
like
word.
Like you're going to spatch your cock?
We're not going to talk like that, okay? Relax. It's nothing bad. It's just a cooking term that means to split a bird in half by breaking the backbone and grilling it. Usually right after being killed. Haven't you ever spatchcocked your Thanksgiving turkey?
No, I have not. And I'm finding this really hard to believe that is the definition.
No. We have. Like, Gabby was the queen of spatchcocking. Oh my God, in so many different ways. I miss Gabby so much. Oh, okay. I highly recommend it. Okay. And I swear it cooks faster, more evenly. I totally love it.
Is it like when you do CPR on a chicken and you break
yes!
it?
Yes. Oh my God. Well, if you would do CPR too hard. And
yeah.
you would like
yeah, yeah.
snap. You would snap them in half. That's awesome. Okay. Side note. This also means to put together hastily or inappropriately. So like, I spatchcock reports together for my boss all the time, especially when I have no idea what the hell I'm doing. So two definitions. You got to figure this out. It's either, you know, ripping a turkey in half or like putting something together fast. Got it?
I feel like these are very different definitions.
They are. They are.
And I think I'm in trouble because there's no way I'm going to get spatchcock worked into this episode.
Oh, we're going to do it.
Okay, how?
I have no idea, but we'll jam it in there somewhere, okay?
Well, I'm going to probably need your help, so just keep that in mind.
Okay, fine.
Okay, let's just get started. Let's see where it goes. And are we going to start with Baby Jimmy?
Oh, we got to. That's how we always start. We got to start with Baby Jimmy.
Okay,
right?
Give me the history.
Let's go. Okay. So once upon a time in a town called Plains, Georgia. Yeah, Plains. This actually sounds more like some massive landscape of a city, but it's actually about as small as my backyard. Our 39th president of the United States was born on October 1st, 1924. Little James Earl Carter Jr., or Jimmy, as everyone would call him, shot right out of his mom's vagina and straight into the world. And no one really cared, except his mom, who was basically laying there totally spatchcocked.
Oh, my God.
Yes.
Seriously? One, disgusting. Two, not even the right definition.
Okay,
either
fine.
One. Either one.
It was funny, but we won't count it. That's fine. Okay. So then there's his dad, James Earl Carter Sr. Oh, my God. That's so genius. I love this name game. He was tired of spatchcocking all these turkeys, so he decides it's time to do something much more boring and become a peanut farmer. But since there's nothing to really do when you farm peanuts except sit around and watch them grow, he decides he should buy the town's general store so they could, you know, have money and stuff. That way, he could say he was a businessman.
Good on Jimmy Sr., taking care of the fam.
I know, right? And his mom, Lillian Gordy Carter, otherwise known as Miss Lillian, because all Southerners in 1924 had cute nicknames, of course, she decides she should be a nurse and take care of the town because she has a great big heart and wants to help everybody she possibly can. All the friggin' time, because she was just awesome like that. So basically, all I'm saying is that little Jimmy had good parents. He came from a good stock, as you would say.
I mean, it certainly sounds like good old Southern hospitality.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, they weren't like rich or anything right back then, but it was all about farming. So naturally, Jimmy Jr. grew up and had to learn how to farm and stuff. Well, I guess be a peanut farmer, more specifically, right?
I'm sure that's probably really hard work.
Oh, right? Totally. I mean, all in a day's wage. He had to, like, feed the peanuts and then, like, probably milk the peanuts and also, like, probably shear some of the peanuts in winter when their shells got too long.
What the hell are you talking about?
I don't know. I'm just trying to make this podcast mildly interesting, considering little Jimmy Jr. would just sit around all day and watch peanuts grow before he harvested them.
You're literally killing me over here.
Well, what the hell do you want me to say? How am I supposed to make peanut farming interesting? Oh, but wait. One thing I did read when I was researching all this stuff was that since the Carters owned a bunch of land, Jimmy Jr. would actually work with all the black tenant farmers who were renting parts of Jimmy's parents' property to grow crops and sell them.
Wait, they rented land to black farmers?
Yeah. So it was called sharecropping. I'm sure everybody knows this. I did not know this. And basically, people who couldn't afford land would rent from those who could and then grow crops and sell them. And since they didn't have any money, they would pay for this by giving a portion of their crop to the owner of the property.
Okay, that makes sense.
And since Jimmy was young and saw all this unfairness and inequality, he gained some serious perspective that he would have never gotten otherwise. So I say that's pretty cool, I guess, right?
I think it is.
Right. Well, he's on the right track
here. It shaped him to who he was.
Oh, it totally did. Oh, absolutely. All right. But like, he wasn't as hick as I'm making it all sound. Like, he went to school and stuff.
I figured so much.
Okay, well, you never know. It was like 1930, man. Tough times, okay? But I guess he was pretty smart and did good. But I'm not really sure how they know that because, like, there was probably like four kids in the entire school in Plains, Georgia at the time.
I was just going to say, it was probably like single classroom, right. I mean, super tiny.
I looked it up. The whole town had 400 people in it. So how many kids were there under 17 years old going to school?
It does give us hope that, you know, anybody can become the president of the United States.
Yeah, if that wasn't clear before, it certainly is now with the current streak we're on with the last few presidents.
Touche.
Right? Okay, so basically, as I'm like spatchcocking all this together.
Okay, you can stop.
I told you I was going to jam it in, right?
You did. You jammed it in multiple.
I feel like that one really worked, right? You could spatchcock this together, right?
Okay, fair. Sure.
All right. Anyway, during his childhood, he was able to develop a pretty strong moral character thanks to a few things. So he grew up around a bunch of black people in what was really a segregated South still, like at the time, totally. This was like 1930, remember. And the whole time he watched his mom treat the black community with a lot of respect, and that made a big impression on him. Nowhere else were people treating them equal like the Carters were. And then two, growing up in the Great Depression taught him to work for everything he had and learn to appreciate like little things. Of course, you know, like breathing and stuff, like, and playing with his pet rock named Harry.
Pet rock named Harry. Are you being for real right now?
No.
I never know.
No, I'm not being for real. But I heard the Great Depression sucked, right? My mom grew up during the Great Depression. She used to save and reuse tinfoil. Like, we literally had it in a ball in our kitchen in, like, 1985. Okay? So I assume shit was hard, right?
I mean, but a pet rock.
Okay, whatever. My kids have
pet rocks.
Okay. Then he was playing with dirt. I don't know what he was doing. He wasn't poor, but there was nothing to do during the Great Depression. What do you want me to say? He was watching peanuts grow.
I mean, it's kind of like COVID. It's fine.
Okay, fine. All right. And then finally, growing up on the farm, right, taught him about hard work and humility because all his friends were real farmers and probably made fun of him.
That's not true.
Okay. No, I made that part up. But it's probably partly
true. See, I told you. I can never tell.
Okay. But boys are mean. But like, my point is he grew up on a farm, so he knows what work ethic is. My point of all this is the values that Jimmy learned as a wee lad, like as a wee little lad, later became the cornerstone, the bedrock people for his career as a politician. But bigger than that, a humanitarian, Amanda.
So wait, you're telling me he goes from a one-room schoolhouse somewhere in nowhere, Georgia, to then becoming the president of the United States? Really? No way, because I can't even fathom that in today's culture. Like, how did he even become president? Got to fill in some blanks here.
Let's do it. It took a while. Okay, there was some stuff in between for sure. So first, when he's like 19, he goes into the U.S. Naval Academy and ends up serving as a U.S. Naval officer, specializing in submarine warfare.
Okay, maybe that is how he starts the path.
Hunt for Red October, people, let's go. Okay, but then his dad dies 10 years later in 1953. So he moves back home and then manages the family's peanut farm because he figures that's the right thing to do because he's awesome.
He's a good son.
I know. I don't know if I would do that for my dad. Would you do that for your dad or mom? I don't know that I would like change my whole life. The guy was a submarine officer. And then he's like, yeah, I'm going to do peanut. This is a good dude.
Hey, well, he was raised by good parents.
Good dude. Yeah. So anyway, while he's peanut farming, he's got a shit ton of time on his hands. Go figure. So he starts getting involved in politics and in the local community. That's how it sort of all started. So then by the early 1960s, he's officially all up in the politics. First, he served in the Georgia State Senate in the mid-60s. And then in the late 60s, he ran, unsuccessfully, mind you, for governor of Georgia. But even though he lost, he like still hung around. And it paid off because in 1970, he re-ran and won and was officially elected the 76th governor of Georgia. Way to be relentless, Jimmy Jr. You can't give up, right? Persistence pays off for sure. Remember, 1970, this is during the civil rights era. So don't forget, he was a massive proponent of helping the black community and gaining equal rights. So people were really starting to take notice of him. His famous inaugural address in 1971 gained some big national news when he said, and I quote, "I say to you frankly, the time for racial discrimination is over. No poor, rural, weak, or black person should ever have to bear the additional burden of being deprived of the opportunity of an education, a job, or simple justice."
I mean, channeling a little MLK Jr. there, right?
Oh, seriously, right? Except he was white. Okay, and not quite as articulate as MLK. Who are we kidding? And not assassinated. Okay.
Okay, maybe not the most perfect reference. No, but still, it, like, the content.
Dude, a white dude standing up for black people back in that day, bold move. People are taking note. So after the end of his term in 1974, he was like super fired up then to start running for national office. Side note. And fun fact, maybe? Are we already? I'm fun facting. Can I fun fact right now?
I guess so.
Let's go. Wait, by the way, can we start saying fun facting? Can we like trademark?
Coin it?
I want to trademark that term, fun facting. We're fun facting. Okay. So around the same time, his mom, Miss Lillian, you remember?
Yes.
Good old Miss Lillian, signs up for the Peace Corps when she's 68 years old and flies off to India to start helping all the poor people over there. So it's like, how can you not like the Carter family? Am I right?
Oh, you're so right. And I think the Carters put the Cleavers to shame.
Oh, the Beav.
Yeah.
Shout out to Beav Cleave. I love it. Look at that, right? All right. So back to your original question. When Jimmy ended up running for president, it was sort of like right place, right time. It was the mid-70s. People were still pissed about the whole Richard Nixon Watergate scandal. Do you know what that's about?
I do, actually.
Okay, right.
So I've been to the library.
So people are like super pissed. Like they're mad at politics, the whole thing. And so Jimmy was sort of able to sneak in as the Washington outsider, so to speak. Like, think about it. Naval officer, former governor, and someone who cared enough to come home and take care of his dad's peanut farm. People loved his character. And the idea of honesty and integrity was top of mind to the American voters, thanks to good old tricky Dick Nixon. I think it also helped that he was a Southerner, which obviously appealed to the masses of the minority Southern voters at the time. He fit the ideal candidate, right? That whole idea to a T, like absolutely right place, right time. So he was also smart enough to announce his candidacy way earlier than all the other Democratic nominees and spent a ton of time traveling across the country, like meeting voters, building his support in the primaries. So he really like didn't have any competition early on. So in 1976, he ran against President Gerald Ford, who, if you remember, was already in office after the whole Nixon mess. And pretty much the presidency was handed to him. Because remember, Ford had already pardoned Nixon by this time. And that certainly didn't help Ford at all. So like Nixon, Watergate, the whole thing, Ford comes in, takes over, and then like, oh, I love you, Nixon. I'm going to pardon you. Like, no harm, no foul. So people are like, kind of like, fuck Gerald Ford, right? Like, they didn't want to deal with him anymore. So Carter totally took advantage of this and basically just said, look, people, I'm honest. They're not. Vote for me. It's a no-brainer. And after they tallied all the votes, Carter won. But not by a lot, actually. Popular vote was 50% to 48%, and the Electoral College was 297 to 240. So pretty close, actually, all things considered.
Okay, so I wasn't alive or anything back then, but just by the way you talked about him, I think I probably would have voted for him. He definitely sounds like my kind of president, not going to lie. Even though I've read enough history to know he kind of sucked. So why did people think he sucked so bad? Like, did he do anything good?
All right, well, he didn't suck, but people really don't care anymore to get like all the details. Like all presidents, he did some good things and some not so good things. So he only kind of sucked. I'll do the unsucky things first, and then I'll do the sucky. Okay? All right, so...
Sucky.
Right, sucky. Right, so I'll start with the Camp David Accords of 1978. Totally unsucky. This was probably one of the things he's best known for.
That's great. What are they?
Okay, so they basically brokered a peace agreement between Egypt and Israel. What's the big deal, right? Because you have to remember that up until this time, no one in the Middle East recognized Israel as a country. No one. Ever. And this agreement basically established a framework for peace in the Middle East, I like to say. It was a huge deal at the time.
Huge.
It was. Are we channeling the new president of the United States? Did I just predict something? Oh, my bad. Sorry, Kamala. Okay. All right. I'm not throwing out politics here. I don't know who I'm voting for. Who are you voting for? Do you know yet? Oh, we shouldn't talk about this on the podcast. Yes, we totally should. Okay. Then there was the whole Panama Canal Treaty.
So another unsucky one?
A totally unsucky one, yes.
Okay.
Where we agreed to return control of the Panama Canal to Panama by the year 2000. So remember, this was 1979 or whatever. So in 21 years, he was going to return it to Panama. And when he did it, not going to lie, some Americans were pretty pissed. But of course, here we are 50 years later, and now it's viewed as probably the major step that improved U.S.-Latin American relations.
So I guess you would call him a visionary then.
Totally. Because at the time it was like, oh no, it's our Panama Canal. And he's like, dude, it's Panama's Panama Canal. Okay, so he's also the first to officially recognize the People's Republic of China and establish formal diplomatic relations with them.
Seriously?
Yes.
It took that long?
Yeah, so up until that time, I guess it was just Communist China, or if you remember the name, Red China. We only recognized the Republic of China, or the ROC, in Taiwan. And I'm sure some people were pissed, but it was a pretty sneaky move, Amanda, because it helped us get the Soviet Union's attention during the Cold War. So basically, we got the Soviet Union nervous because now we had an ally, more or less, in that area, not to mention access to all of China's products and services. So it was a pretty good move, even though it was super risky at the time, because we were fighting, really, like, at that time, the Russians, not China. Make sense?
It doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
It was kind of like roulette.
Yeah.
Russian roulette.
Absolutely, right? Yeah. So then in 1979, he goes head-to-head with Soviet leader Leonid Brezhnev and signs the SALT Treaty, basically limiting the number of nuclear weapons that could be built between the U.S. and the Soviet Union. But then the Soviets invaded Afghanistan in 1980, and we didn't really ratify it. But still, it was a totally important step in arms control. This dude's like doing real international stuff here. He was smart. Okay. So then back home in America, after the Iranian Revolution broke out, he passed the National Energy Act, hoping to reduce dependence on foreign oil so we wouldn't have to wait like in really long lines based on odd or even license plates. Do you remember? Wait, you weren't alive. Okay, so I totally remember doing that. But anyway.
Really?
Yes. Huh. Yeah. My dad had to pull up depending on his license. Yeah, it was crazy. All right. So then he also creates the Department of Energy, a whole department, so we could better control and coordinate our national energy policy. He also signed some laws that made more national parks and wilderness areas and even saved like 100 million acres of land in Alaska. I'm not making that up. I know you think I make certain things. 100 million acres of land in Alaska. So it would be protected for future generations.
I mean, that's awesome. You know me. I love the land.
It's
conservation.
It's total badass. Right. He also expanded the food stamp program, tried to reform welfare, and tried to improve public education and healthcare through federal funding.
I mean, it just sounds like he grew government a lot.
The guy was working hard, right? I hate that people like drag his name through the mud. He was a huge proponent of women's rights. He appointed more women to federal positions, Amanda, including judgeships, than any other previous administration ever. He even created the Office of Women's Rights at the Department of Education. He was pretty good.
All right. It sounds like a lot of good stuff.
Yes.
So why don't we talk about him more? Why are people spatchcocking all over him?
Wrong. I don't even think we've used spatchcock right one time yet.
I told you we wouldn't. Okay, and I did tell you earlier.
Do not give up. Come on.
Okay, fine. But tell me why no one likes him then.
Well, because there was some sucky stuff then, remember? We only did the unsucky stuff.
Okay, like what?
Okay, like the whole Iran hostage crisis in 1979. Okay, this is where we go sideways. 52 Americans were taken hostage in Tehran for 444 days.
It's a long time.
Do you know this?
No.
Oh my God, we have to do a whole podcast on that. Did you watch Argo?
No.
Amanda, you didn't watch Argo.
Okay.
Excellent. Can we watch it together?
Okay.
Excellent movie. Seriously. Okay. And so he sort of drug his feet way too long to figure shit out. And good old Ronnie Reagan had to step in and handle all that shit because he wouldn't make a move. Carter wouldn't make a move. We had hostages over there for 444 days.
Was Reagan his?
No. Reagan took over as president in 1980.
Oh, so this is after. So it became a continual problem. Yeah.
So Carter was 76 to 80. So the hostage crisis, 79.
Rolled into
Ray and Reagan took care of business. And that's why people loved Reagan, right? Also, he never got a handle on inflation, which I would argue is not totally his fault.
Wasn't inflation in the 70s like 14%?
It was crazy. Oh, it was insane. It was absolutely insane. But it stemmed from the Iranian Revolution. But people blamed Carter anyway for like high unemployment, high prices for everything because he was in charge. So I totally get it. But looking back through the lens of history, his presidency was sort of like a mixed bag of some like really key accomplishments. But then the frustrating challenges of like nobody wants Americans stuck with like our country not doing anything.
Fair.
Or like crazy hyperinflation because we don't know what we're talking. It sucked.
But
it was hard times for him for sure. He couldn't win. He couldn't win.
Okay, fair. But wasn't he also youngish, like 55 when he left office or something like that?
Yeah, I don't know, something like that. Yeah.
Okay, so growing up as a millennial, I learned more about what he did after his presidency than during it. And I think he did some pretty cool stuff.
Oh, preach it, sister. Give me some of the details. All right, Let's go. Just tell me. I heard absolutely more people, like, I don't think you're alone at this point, is like millennials are sort of taking, let's be honest, millennials are taking over, Gen X's are dying. Are we kidding? Everything after presidency is like amazing what he did, right? Totally.
Right. So one of those things.
What? Go.
After leaving office in 1981, he opened the Carter Center in Atlanta, Georgia.
The Carter Center?
Yeah.
Oh my God. Really? He named it after himself? Like egomaniac.
I mean, he did. Everything's named after yourself, right? Like foundation, endowments. I think
I'd probably call it the Spatchcock Center or something like that. I don't know. Okay
fine. Well, it was cool because it's a non-governmental, non-profit organization dedicated to promoting peace and health and democracy worldwide. So some pretty big stuff. So since it was founded, the Carter Center and Carter personally has mediated conflicts in Ethiopia, North Korea, Bosnia, and Sudan.
Wait, seriously?
Yeah.
North Korea?
Yeah.
Holy crap.
And the center has also monitored over 110 elections in 39 countries to ensure that they are free and fair and promoting democracy and human rights globally.
Okay. First of all, total badass. Second of all, 39 countries, 39th president. Coincidence?
Oh,
I don't think so.
Look at that.
Okay. Like, I didn't know he was, like, in Ethiopia, North Korea, Bosnia. Like, this is cool. Like,
I mean, really high conflict areas.
No, this is serious shit he's going into. Like, I love this.
Yeah, but wait, there's more.
Okay, go. I'm, so, hold on. I feel like normally you're Luke Skywalker and I'm Yoda. and I'm doing like all of like the research into it. But like right now, we just flipped a script. Like, this is amazing. I'm super excited. Go.
Well, I'm glad I know something that you don't know.
This is great. Go, go, go.
So cheers.
You mean post.
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 The center has also led campaigns to nearly eradicate neglected tropical diseases. Now, I didn't remember all of them, so just like I had to look it
tropical
up.
Tropical diseases? I'm intrigued. What?
So, like the Guinea worm disease?
What is that?
Well, I don't know. River blindness.
River blindness?
What, yeah.
Okay.
And then lymphatic filariasis.
Oh, shit. Lymphatic filariasis? Holy crap. Amanda, what's lymphatic filariasis?
Evidently a fancy term for elephantitis.
Oh, crap. Like big stuff. Literally. Oh, my God. Like when people swell up all huge and stuff. Like when your balls get really big.
I mean, sure. Yeah, totally.
Okay.
Uh-huh. But Carter had a hand in some of the most successful public health campaigns in like human history. And nobody really recognizes that or gave him credit for it. So maybe you should stop throwing some shade.
Okay, so where was Carter during COVID? If this guy's doing like Guinea worm disease, which I have no idea what, river blindness? Really? What is river?
Sure he was 96. So
okay, I don't care. But like, so he's like going to all these oddball countries and figuring out how to eradicate disease. And then we get to COVID and Trump's like, I think if you just swallow some bleach, you're okay. But yeah, weird. What if we come to Amanda, seriously?
You're really depressing. So to get us out of this depressive state.
Okay.
There's another really cool thing they did.
Forge ahead, Amanda. Okay. Forge ahead.
So he partners with Habitat for Humanity. You've heard of it.
Yes, totally have.
Okay. So for everyone who hasn't, it's an organization that builds affordable housing, right?
I love it.
But since he got involved in 1984, he and his wife personally built over 100 homes in 14 countries.
Wait, this dude like hammer and nailed 100 homes?
Yep. In blood, tears, sweat, all of it.
Okay, so wait, 1984, 2024. Give me, do that quick. 40 years?
Yeah,
that's 40 years. Mm-hmm. 40 years, 100 homes? That's like 2.5. Like this guy's building 2.5 homes per year with his wife.
I mean,
that's amazing.
Not personally, like just them. I'm sure there's help.
Okay, but he's still a badass.
Still,
his hand is on. Right. So
yeah.
I've built a house. Like I've gone to Mexico, built a house for like you go for 24 hours, but it's hard work.
Yeah.
Holy crap.
But not only that.
What? There's more.
Yeah. Thanks to Carter, Habitat for Humanity has expanded massively by repairing or building over 1 million houses worldwide since 1984. So a million.
A million.
Yeah. It's 25,000 houses a year. Or if you want to break it down some more.
Break it down for me, math major.
70 houses a day, 365 days for the last 40 years.
Amazing.
But if that's not enough, while he's doing this.
This is, hold on. Let me, I need to do Regis Philbin. This is bonkers. Bonkers. What else we got?
While he was doing all of that, right?
Yeah, what?
He's also still writing books. I think he's written like 30 of them.
30 books. Seriously?
Yeah. On a bunch of different topics.
I can't even write one book. This guy's on 30 books.
I know. It is your life goal to write a book.
Oh my God. What are his books about?
Well, I think you just got to pick a bunch of topics you want to write about because evidently it worked for him.
Oh my God.
Like he has one on human rights, one on democracy, faith.
Yeah, of course he does.
I think he has one on public policy.
Oh my God. I hate him. This guy's amazing.
But two that I want to kind of call out, a call to action, women, religion, violence, and power. He wrote it in 2014. So it addresses the global oppression of women and girls and advocates for gender equality.
Okay, wait a second. Break on that. The guy was 90 years old in 2014.
Yeah, exactly.
And he writes a book about that.
Like, evidently.
A 90-year-old dude.
Maybe he has a ghostwriter.
Okay. I officially love Jimmy Carter. I'm on the bandwagon.
Yeah, I don't know if I love him.
No,
but you know, like it's...
Dude, if he... We're trying to educate people on sort of sophisticated. This guy's 90 years old and still figuring out how to help our
Correct.
Communities.
Correct.
He's amazing. What's the other one? Give me
the other
name.
The other one was Palestine, Peace, Not Apartheid. In 2006, it's a book that advocates for a two-state solution to the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, emphasizing the need for a just and lasting peace. And while you can say that the book is certainly polarizing.
Oh my God, to say the least, right? A two-state solution. Right.
Yes, but it does demonstrate Carter's commitment to finding peaceful solutions.
No, you got
to
preach it. It does. I know, super not popular for some people, but I can't believe that he had a hand in all that. I love that about him.
Yeah, he's just kind of everywhere.
Yeah.
Though.
I love it.
I mean, good or bad? I don't know.
No, just good?
Okay.
Well, it depends on your politics, I understand, but I will say the guy's a visionary because he's out there still trying to figure out how to solve problems. I like people trying to solve problems. Whether they have the right or wrong answers, they're still trying to solve.
Fair.
Love it.
Okay. But Carter's not done.
Seriously? He's on a roll, dude. Really?
Yeah, he is.
It's time to go solo. He's on a roll. Go ahead. Sorry. I was channeling Vanilla Ice. Go ahead.
All right. So we got to go back. Maybe not as back as Vanilla Ice, but like 2002.
Okay. That's totally Vanilla Ice era. Go ahead.
Oh, just kidding. He seems so much older than 2002.
Oh, no.
So he goes and he wins the Nobel Peace Prize. And it's basically as a thanks for his decades of long efforts to promote peace and human rights. And probably thanks to all the books he's written and houses he built, right?
Of course he won the Nobel Peace Prize.
Of course.
I can't even win one award. This guy goes and wins a Nobel Peace Prize. Fine. Just kill me now.
I'll make
Go ahead.
You an award.
Thank you. Okay. Please do.
Yep. And as recently as 10 years ago when he was writing that book, he still continued to travel on diplomatic peace missions, and he played roles in diffusing international tension and helping to negotiate the release of political prisoners in both North Korea and Cuba. And
okay. So wait a second. This is hysterical. So he can't negotiate the Iranian hostage crisis.
Maybe he learned a couple things.
For shit.
I don't know.
But now he's negotiating political prisoners in North Korea. Sorry. Shout out to Jimmy. I love you. You're 100 years old. God bless you. But
I mean, he did it when he was 90.
Okay, so he learned a thing or two, is your point.
Sure.
I love
yeah.
it. Okay, got it. Go.
Okay, but up until 2020.
2020?
Yeah.
Like 4 years ago. Yeah, like this guy's like 96 now.
Right. Like okay. during COVID or maybe
yeah.
before
yeah,
COVID.
During COVID.
He was still teaching Sunday school at Maranatha Baptist Church in Plains, Georgia. So back home. He went back home.
This guy is a legend. He goes home to teach Sunday school when he's 96 years old.
Seriously.
Okay. I get this. Jimmy Carter was arguably the most impactful post-presidential president. Say that 10 times fast. Post-presidential president in American history. His commitment to service, human dignity, and global citizenship basically makes him a legend, people. Like somewhere between Jesus and Elvis Presley legend. Am I right?
Maybe.
Well, he's that's
pretty high.
Elvis Presley? Like, really?
I mean.
All right. Somewhere between Jesus and
King.
Donald Trump? I mean, what do you want? I don't know. All right. High up on the list for sure. Okay. He's now sort of revered in both the United States and around the world. And even as he approaches his 100th birthday, shout out to the centenarian. Carter's influence and contributions continue to inspire to this day. I love you, Jimmy Brutta. Happy birthday to you, Jimmy, my friend, my captain, my king, Jimmy.
Well, maybe he'll hear this podcast because we'll just tag him in it.
Oh, yes.
So,
let's go.
So do you have any fun facts lined up for the birthday boy?
Would I let you down? Hell no.
No, you know, it's my favorite part.
All right, let's go. You ready?
I'm ready.
All right. So did you know Jimmy Carter was the first president born in a hospital?
1924.
Uh-huh. Before that, they were just like born in fields and stuff, I guess. I don't know. Although he was born in 1924 in a tiny town in rural Georgia, miles from the nearest big city, James Earl Carter Jr. drew his first breath at Wise Sanitarium. Apparently, that's a hospital. Don't ask me.
Like a
sanitarium. This is what, okay. Making him the first U.S. president to be born in a hospital. And his mom, Lillian, Miss Lillian, worked there as a nurse. When the time came to deliver her baby, the hospital had an open room, and Dr. Sam Wise, seriously, the guy's name is Dr. Sam Wise.
He's pretty wise.
Shout out to like Lord of the Rings. Shout out to the Hobbit, Sam Wise. Okay. So anyway, Dr. Sam Wise urged her to leave.
I love how you went Hobbit and I just went Wise like he was smart. But
yeah, no,
okay, sure.
Urged her to have a baby there instead of in the Carter home. Probably because there was no Labor Day yet. And the doctor thought that if she delivered in the hospital, she would go back to work after the umbilical cord was tied. Right?
Oh, my God. Like how you typed that in there.
Right, totally. Okay. Super fun fact. When I'm doing a fun fact and I have a fun fact inside a fun fact, it's super fun fact. Okay?
Yes. I think you established this last episode.
Okay. My bad, yo. 3 years later, Miss Lillian would help deliver her future daughter-in-law in the same hospital.
Oh, that's funny.
Rosalind.
Yeah.
Yes. She delivered. That's so
serendipitous, I should say, not funny.
I think it's quite cute.
Yeah.
It's very serendipitous. Fun fact number two. The county library provided a young Jimmy Carter with his first job. He set up a traveling library, called it the Bookmobile, and he would drive around small towns and park like the ice cream truck. But instead of big sticks and ice cream sandwiches, he'd give out books. Who is this guy, right? All right, number three. Jimmy Carter ditched school and lost out on being valedictorian.
Really? For
ditching school. Totally true. On April 1st, 1941, Jimmy and a few other senior boys left school and went to Americus for the day. I guess a local city close by to celebrate April Fool's Day. I guess that's a big thing you do back then. I don't know. So, of course, Carter receives zeros for that day and was disqualified from becoming valedictorian and instead received the distinction of salutatorian, silver medal.
If you're not first, you're last.
Right. I mean, there was four people in the school. So, I mean, so he had to be at like two other people, really. Okay. Sorry, Jimmy. I love you. Okay. Number four. Before he was a peanut farmer, state senator, governor, and president, Jimmy Carter served as a submariner in the U.S. Navy. After graduating from the Naval Academy, he decided to focus on nuclear submarines and inspired by his respect for Admiral Hyman G. Rickover. How could you not love that name? Hyman Rickover? I love that. Okay. Served aboard the submarine USS K-1 along with a few others for almost 7 years. 7 years.
That's a long time.
Okay. Number five. Did you know that Carter was the first president to live in public housing?
What?
Yeah. After his dad died in 1953, Carter returned to Plains, Georgia, and due to a post-war housing shortage, Jimmy, Rosalind, and their sons moved into a new public housing project less than three blocks from Plains High School, becoming the first tenants of Unit 9. Carter has subsequently said that the time spent there led to his interest in Habitat for Humanity.
That makes so much more sense.
I think that's so badass. I love Jimmy. Okay, number six. The Carters were the first couple to walk in the inaugural parade from the Capitol to the White House. Right there on the pavement, Pennsylvania Avenue. Defying the advice of the Secret Service and starting a new tradition continued by every president since to this day.
Creating tradition.
I love it.
That's I wonder good. If it was like intentional, like they knew this would become tradition.
I have no idea. Huh. He was just a stud. He's like, no, I'm doing this. I don't really care. Right?
Parade my wife.
Yeah. It's like Pope Francis, where he's like, no, I'm not using the Pope Mobile, man. We're done. If I die, I die. Let's go. Right? I love it. Okay. Number seven. Jimmy Carter has lived in the same Georgia home, Amanda, for 70 years. In 1981, when the Carters left the White House, they returned to the only home they ever owned at 209 Woodlawn Avenue, purchased in 1961. The modest ranch-style house served as home base for the Carter family throughout his time in the Georgia Senate and the offices of governor and president. He is one of only a few presidents in recent history to move back into the home he lived in before he became president. I love it. Okay. All right. And finally, number eight. Not only has Jimmy Carter won the Nobel Peace Prize, but he's also won three Grammy Awards.
How?
Okay. Right. In spoken word album category.
I'm sorry. Yeah. He did spoken word?
Yes, but for audio recordings of his books,
oh, okay.
Faith, A Journey for All, in 2019, A Full Life, Reflections at 90, 2018, and Our Endangered Values, America's Moral Crisis, 2006.
How interesting. He got three Grammys. Just voicing his audiobook.
Because he's a stud.
Huh.
That's all I got. Fun facts are over.
Okay. All right, people. There you have it. The life of Jimmy Carter, a man whose legacy goes far beyond his presidency, marked by his deep commitment to humanitarian causes and his unwavering dedication to public service. But before we close, give me what I need to know to be dangerous to keep up when I'm at his birthday party.
Whoa, let's go. Why wasn't I invited? That's total BS.
I mean, we're going to try to get you invited.
Fine.
Hashtag Jimmy Carter.
Get me invited. I love you, Jimmy. Invite us. Okay. If you don't remember anything, at least remember this. First, watch Jimmy Carter, Rock and Roll President on Amazon Prime or HBO Max. It's awesome. It's only an hour and 30 minutes. Get on it. No excuses. It's a view of Jimmy Carter's life through music. Super well done. Love it. Okay. Second, at your next hangout, when the subject of politics comes up, and trust me, it's sure to come up, share the fun fact that Jimmy Carter just turned 100.
And it just gets you off the current topic of politics.
Oh my God. Absolutely right. Please, people, just do it.
Dodge it.
Right. And third, share these interesting and relevant details to seem, well, sort of sophisticated. Number one, Jimmy Carter served as the 39th president of the United States from 1977 to 1981, getting elected thanks to his honesty and integrity, focusing on human rights and energy policy during his term. Number two, he brokered the historic 1978 Camp David Accords, which led to the peace treaty between Egypt and Israel, the first time ever a Middle Eastern country recognized Israel as a country. Number three, in 2002, he won the Nobel Peace Prize for his efforts in promoting peace, democracy, and human rights globally. Number four, Carter is widely regarded for his post-presidential work, particularly with the Habitat for Humanity and his global humanitarian efforts through the Carter Center. Egomaniac. And number five, finally, before entering politics, Carter was a peanut farmer in Plains, Georgia, which helped shape his down-to-earth, humble persona throughout his entire career.
And there you have it, dear listeners. As we wrap up this episode on Jimmy Carter, let's take a moment to appreciate that the man not only brokered peace deals and built houses, but also knew his way around a peanut farm. Who else can say they've gone from sorting legumes to winning the Nobel Peace Prize?
Right.
Just remember, when you're spatchcocking your turkey this Thanksgiving,
yes! And you're you did it right!
And you're feeling overwhelmed by life, if Jimmy Carter can go from peanuts to peace treaties, you're probably doing okay. We'd like to think we've shared just enough information to make you more sophisticated and either a flaming nuisance or a bit more interesting to your fellow humans. Sort of. If you enjoyed this episode and found it particularly interesting, don't forget to subscribe, leave a review, and share with your peeps. Until next time, stay curious and stay inspired.